winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Well, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a state budget, maybe?
We were there for the governor's first public cabinet meeting in quite a while. We'll begin by showing a portion of the Q&A with reporters. The first question here asks if the governor sees a problem getting an on-time budget.
You have the millionaire's tax and the expiration of the millionaire's tax. I believe it should be extended. That is probably the seminal issue in the budget. From the Senate Republicans oppose the extension of the tax, almost on philosophical grounds. If you do not extend the millionaire's tax, you have a tremendous hole in the budget, and I don't know how you complete a budget without the millionaire's tax. It's a $3.5 billion hole next year.
What do you think of the Assembly proposing to increase taxes on those who make, I think, $5 million and higher?
Well, if the Senate's position is forget an increase, they won't do an extension of the current tax. We need an extension of the current tax just to fund what we have on the table. And again, I don't know how you do a budget without the millionaire's tax. I don't know how you justify to the people of this state that you want to allow a millionaire's tax to expire, the surcharge that went into effect in 2009. So on the argument of, well, people will leave if we have this tax. The tax went into effect in 2009. I don't believe it caused anyone to leave. If somebody was going to leave because of the tax, they would have left in 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, right? So I don't buy that argument. I don't know how you close the budget without it. And when the choice is between extending the millionaire's tax versus a middle-class tax cut, after we just went through an election and we know that the middle class is in pain and we know that the middle class needs help, and they want to argue for a millionaire's tax cut instead of a middle class tax cut, I don't get it. It would be at the expense of the $1 billion in education aid, and how they can argue that they want to do a millionaire's tax cut rather than more education aid. A millionaire's tax cut rather than college affordability. I don't understand any tenet of that argument. But that is the main argument for the budget.
Speaking of holes in the budget, do you think it's wise not to really have a plan B if Obamacare is repealed? You've said it would be devastating to health care. It could be $3.7 billion. Or do you have a plan B that you're just not making public?
Plan B, you know, what is Plan B to an event that you can't even conceive of, right? Now, you have a whole continuum of possible proposals. Block granting of Medicaid. Well, what do you mean by block granting of Medicaid? Do you mean the same amount of Medicaid without the restrictions? That would be fine. That might even be a good thing. Or do you mean when you say block granting of Medicaid, reducing the amount, and then block granting it? What we used to call passing the buck without passing the bucks, right? Are you going to say to New York, well, Obamacare is repealed, here's the Medicaid money, it has fewer restrictions, but it's only half the money? There's been no discussion on the specificity. I was down at the governor's meeting last weekend, and all you have are a lot of rumors. The plan, you know, you could be talking about anywhere from a $500 million cut to a $3 billion cut. So you can't come up with an intelligent plan to a series of hypotheticals. But if it did happen, we would have to respond. And obviously, we've been thinking about scenarios that would give us the flexibility to respond.
Governor, have you spoken to, or are you scheduled to speak to the U.S. Attorney's Office about any economic development program? And also, how would you respond to critics who say your budget, given that federal investigation, should have more independent oversight of economic development outside of the executive branch, or outside of your office?
Well, look, you do have independent oversight, right? That's called 62 district attorneys, an attorney general, U.S. attorneys in the Southern District, Northern District, et cetera, Eastern District. So that is independent oversight. And obviously, it's been effective independent oversight. So you can't say there isn't independent oversight. Now, you can say, well, we have 62 DAs and four U.S. attorneys. That's 66, and an attorney general, that's 67. We want an additional body. We want 68. We want 69. We want 70. But you can't say that we don't have oversight. The economic development programs primarily are doing extraordinarily well, right? They're about restoring jobs, restoring the upstate economy. You go to Buffalo, it is a different city. You look at all the numbers in this state, it's irrefutable, but that the economic development programs have worked. You have 7.9 million private sector jobs, more jobs than ever before in the history of the state of New York. Well, that's a random coincidence. I don't think so.
But my question was not if there's independent oversight, but if there's enough. The critics are saying there's not. The Comptroller, Citizens Budget Commission. You're saying that there's enough independent oversight.
I'm saying there's enough.
And is there anything you can point to other than looking at Buffalo that proves the economic development programs and the film credit program have worked or effective?
Well, you have unemployment is down in every region in the state. You have a record number of jobs, higher than any number in recorded history.
In response to the wave of recent hate crimes and anti-Semitism in New York and across the country, Governor Cuomo visited the local Jewish Community Center in Albany to announce new actions, including a $25 million grant program to boost safety and security at schools and daycare centers at risk of hate crimes or attacks because of their ideology or beliefs.
This is repugnant to everything we believe as New Yorkers. It is an act of cowardice. It suggests a basic misunderstanding of who we are as New Yorkers and what we believe as New Yorkers. This state was founded on the premise of equality and the promise of freedom from discrimination. We are all immigrants in this state. We are all from someplace else, unless you're a Native American. And the operating principle is that we open our arms and we embrace all. That's what this state is about fundamentally. And these acts of anti-Semitism are repugnant to that very premise. It's especially reprehensible when you think that these Jewish community centers often primarily handle children. They offer daycare. They offer pre-K services. So these threats are against children. And when you talk of really ugly, reprehensible behavior, I don't think there's anything worse than racist activity, bigoted activity, and targeting facilities that serve our children.
In other news, the legislature held a hearing this week about the eventual closing of the Indian Point nuclear power plants in Westchester County. The governor and Entergy, the company that operates the facility, announced earlier this year a plan to shut it down by April 2021. Terrence Murphy, the senator who represents the area, peppered members of the Cuomo administration testifying that day, expressing concern over the future cost of electricity and the loss of tax dollars for the local communities.
In your opening statement, you stated that the governor has been trying to do this and you guys have been trying to shut down Indian Point for over a decade, correct?
That's correct.
And you again stated in your opening statement that this is going to pose a challenge, quote unquote, pose a challenge that you said with regards to the tax implications for what's going to happen over there. So if you've been looking to do something for over 10 years, wouldn't you have a plan?
Well, Senator, again, I want to point out that this is at the heart of the agreement was time to plan. There's no immediate impact. We have several years in which to plan. I would want to point out that in other examples of nuclear plant shutdowns around the country, communities have had as little as 4 months. So this is why we have quite a lot of time to plan and engage with you and all other stakeholders.
I would love to, and obviously I will be very involved in those ideas coming out, but this is something that's been going on for 10 years. I think we should have some answers to the people and the over 1,000 employees that are there and the tax implications. Hendrick Hudson School District is $25 million. Buchanan is 47% of their revenue. Mm-hmm. The county, the Cortland is $1 million. I mean, we've got to aim and then shoot, not shoot and then aim.
And finally, there has been a push this session from advocates and members of the legislature for higher wages for those who work with New Yorkers who have developmental disabilities. Former Assemblyman Harvey Wiesenberg from Long Island, a longtime champion for the disabled, was back in the Capitol to help. Harvey, longtime viewers of ours are well familiar with your work and your advocacy for this. Why was it important for you to come up here in retirement, come back to Albany?
I don't retire. God gave me a mission in my life, as I defined. He gave me a special child who could never speak or cry and is blind. And I learned from him that God created Ricky to change people's lives, and he changed my life. And it was a blessing. As I said, Ricky was my angel, my wife was my saint, gave me a mission to advocate for families with disabilities. I had to be up here because the reality is we have a critical issue in the state of New York. I mean, when you really think about people being short-staffed, and I'll tell you from my own life experience, I passed different laws that if you have a special child in a group home, if he has a medical issue, you have to send a one-on-one to advocate for him. You go to an emergency room, you can be there for hours. But you have a special child, somebody's got to speak for a child who can't speak. Well, I went to a hospital when Ricky was in a hospital, and they gave me a mask and a gown. And I went in, we had three special children there. And they brought in their trays, they put their trays down and walked out. And I said, who's going to feed them? Well, they don't have staff. They can't take them out of the group home. Who's going to advocate for them? These are real life situations. There were so many stories to be told, but you have to have an adequate trained professional staff. They become surrogate parents. Not every family and parent relate to their special needs. I mean, if you know about autism, that I would say 80 to 90% of the families are single parent families because of the love and dedication from one parent to the special child and marriages ago. But what we have to do is have dignity and respect for our people, and we have to pay them a living wage. They work double shifts. Some work two jobs. And, you know, it's frightening because they can't even pay their bills. I know this for a fact. Time for a quick story. All right. Dolores in Ricky's house, she makes food preparations for 16 different people, and they all have different diet needs. You know, some have no teeth, so they have to be fed. And she said to me, I can't pay my bills. I'm going to have to leave. I said, Dolores, you can't. Everybody loves you. So being a former educator, I said, find out. And they offered her a job in a school district. Cafeteria, good hours, more money. And the next week I said, how'd you make out, Dolores? She said, well, they offered me the job, but I can't leave because I love my kids. And my kids love me. So you cry. You think, here's a dedicated person that God is taking care of these special children, and she can't afford to pay her bills. And it's government's obligation and responsibility. And everybody has to understand this is a critical issue. Short-staffed, and I gave you a figure, 208-212, cases of neglect and abuse in the state of New York, 83,000, less than 5% investigated. How many cases of neglect, abuse, and deaths are there? Unbelievable to come out. It'll come out. But the reality is, if you don't have trained professional staff, you have a dangerous environment. And people are not going to be fed, and other people are going to suffer. because the fact is that you need these trained professional people, but they have to be paid a living wage, not minimum wage. And you really think that people flipping hamburgers are making more money than people taking care of other human beings, your family members, then you have to make people in government aware. And that's what we're here to do.
Harvey Weisenberg, certainly an effective advocate for the cause. Okay, time now to send it over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, for our Reporters Roundtable.
All right, a busy week indeed. And here to make sense of it, I am happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by John Campbell from the USA Today Network and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. So the governor this week continued his drumbeat against incidents of anti-Semitism that have been occurring around the state. On Wednesday, he appeared at Albany's Jewish Community Center, where we just realized, setting up this conversation, we are all members,
yep,
despite
all
the fact that none of us are Jewish. So,
and all regular participants and all the great, great things that they offer there.
Exactly. Yeah. And a facility that has been subject to two bomb threats over the course of the last 2 months or so. The governor then appeared before Orthodox Jewish students at the Egg in Albany and announced that he would be going to Israel this weekend on what's ostensibly a trade mission, but also a sending a message of solidarity.
Yeah, and this isn't necessarily new for the governor. The governor has long portrayed himself as an ally of the Jewish people. It's something that quite frankly a lot of politicians in New York do, because mm-hmm. there is such a heavy Jewish population in New York. So it's good politics. It's good. From his perspective, good policy. I mean, speaking out against anti-Semitism isn't
always
going to
matter.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
it's
not
going to
have much
pushback.
Also, because what's going on is horrible. So there is a very good reason for him to do it. And you're right.
That's
and it's important constituency as well. But it does seem to play into this larger scenario of the governor, you know, speculation that he would be a presidential candidate in 2020. And he is opening himself more to that by going out of the country, out of the state. He didn't even travel out of the state, I don't think, at all his first term in office. And now he is in Florida Friday morning speaking to the Building Trades Union. So he definitely is raising his profile.
Both of these trips, I would point out, paid for by taxpayers.
Important state business, right?
Yeah. All right.
That being said, you know, it's very clear that he's trying to, without ever really mentioning the president's name,
yeah.
he's trying to draw a distinction between his reaction to these JCC bomb threats mm-hmm. and the anti-Semitism we've seen, and the president's reaction, which is the president, you know, was kind of forced into addressing some of it, and although he did address it right at the top of his joint address to Congress the other day.
Yeah.
Well, you should also mention that these actions are playing well for Governor Cuomo, standing up to Trump, even though he doesn't mention his name. His poll numbers went up to 60% approval rating for the first time in, I think, over 2 years.
Yeah,
he was kind of stuck with half the people liked him, half didn't, no matter what he did, good or bad. And I think that people are looking at that and saying, hey, compared to President Trump, who is not popular
yeah.
in the state, Governor Cuomo looks pretty good right now.
Another action by the governor that has received somewhat more mixed reviews is the plan to close Indian Point. We just saw a clip from the hearing. There have been a couple of hearings now. Lawmakers, some of them, appeared to be very upset at being left out of the process of fashioning this closure plan.
Right. That's absolutely. It's not just lawmakers. It's local officials. It's the school district down there, the Hendrick Hudson School District down there, because, you know, Indian Point is a major job provider down there. The nuclear plant is a major job provider in Westchester County. It is a major taxpayer. It is the largest taxpayer for the Hendrick Hudson School District, for the village of Buchanan, for the town of Cortland. It's a major deal that it was closed. And what you got from this marathon hearing on Tuesday was that the local lawmakers and the local officials were blindsided mm-hmm. by the announcement of the closure, even though Cuomo has been saying that he wants mm-hmm. to close it, but really the agreement to close it down seemingly came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's also a contrast to the upstate nuclear power plants that Governor Cuomo supports and is giving an $8 billion bailout to keep them open. So I guess when you cross some kind of border, maybe the Tappan Zee Bridge, suddenly the attitude changes. They're bad downstate, but they're okay to keep going upstate. And that's actually going to be the subject of a hearing on Monday, I assume.
Right.
Another lengthy hearing on this topic.
That is sure to be lively as well.
Be covering
A lot of the activism around the budget as we get down to the final weeks has been about direct care. We heard Harvey Weisenberg, former assemblyman, mm-hmm. talking about the need for it, a very personal story, of course, for him. Is this the year that the direct care will get the additional aid it needs to keep up with the wage increases?
Well, they're only asking for $50 million, which sounds like a lot, but it's a $160 billion budget, which makes you wonder why they have to fight so hard for this. Maybe the governor likes lawmakers to focus on this so they don't focus on other things in the budget, but I can't really see it being left out of the budget this year, because it's a pretty compelling case.
Well, it's certainly the folks who are advocating for direct care workers are more organized than they've been in past years. They've been effective in getting their message out. Every day there's another event at the Capitol, and they have a lot of lawmakers on their side, so they've been very effective in getting publicity and putting pressure on the governor and lawmakers to support their case.
I attended a separate hearing on the related issue of what many describe as the crisis in in-home care. Mm-hmm. Workers who actually work for many hours a week, in some cases for the elderly or the infirm. That hearing went on forever, also very dramatic. And it's a situation that, in terms of rural areas such as the Adirondacks, is described as being in crisis.
Yeah, so. I mean, these are important jobs in our society, and they've just traditionally been paid so little that it's just, makes you think.
That being said, though, I mean, this is budget time. Everybody is at the Capitol with their hand out, looking
true.
For more money. I mean, it's got to come from somewhere, and you've got the school folks that are there looking for significant sums
That's
of money.
Giant
you've got
rallies all over
exactly.
the state today for more funding
the
for
homeless.
Schools, even though Governor Cuomo's put in $1 billion more in the budget.
But yeah,
they're
so
just saying that'd be a whole other discussion, but they're saying that's not enough because of a court order.
Finally, in the Q&A with the governor, he was asked about whether or not there is enough independent oversight of development projects. And his response was, yeah. Which seemed to beg the question, if that's the case, why is he proposing an independent procurement officer within the executive branch?
I think it's an example of why he doesn't give very many news conferences anymore where he answers questions, because this would have been simple. He could have defended his proposals in the budget and said, I want this inspector general, some bad things have happened, and, we're going to try to do better. But instead, he kind of, went off saying, well, we got all these DAs and, the attorney general and the U.S. attorney, so who needs more oversight, which kind of left people scratching their heads, especially the reform group saying, what?
And it comes as the governor and lawmakers are kind of battling over these regional economic development councils as well, which are, the governor's main economic development strategy, really, to have these regional councils that recommend projects for hundreds of millions of dollars in state grants and state tax breaks. And you've seen a push from lawmakers to push for what they say is more oversight, more transparency, requiring some of these council members to disclose their personal finances and business ties. And then this week you also saw a pushback from some of the governor's closest allies saying that would essentially derail the whole process and painting the legislators as if they're trying to end it.
Also, nine former Cuomo associates have been indicted, face criminal charges, which is another explanation of why he's a little sensitive about this
topic. On these
topic.
Issues, yes. Okay, final question, yes or no, will we have an on-time budget? We have 4 weeks to go. Karen DeWitt.
We better, because I have travel plans.
Dodging the question. John Campbell.
I'll say yes.
A definitive answer. Thank you from John Campbell of USA Today Network, along here with Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Thanks very much. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
Thank you, Casey. Let's reveal this week's New York Now poll question. Would you like to see an extension of the millionaire's tax? Log on to our website and let us know, nynow.org.
I think Scott Pruitt is shaping up to be one of the worst EPA administrators in the agency's 46-year history. And I don't say that lightly, but if you look closely at what he said during his confirmation hearing, you look at his record as Oklahoma Attorney General, EPA is in for some real rough waters.
Last week, we had former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck on the program, who expressed her concerns over the new leadership at the EPA. And we asked you if you were concerned about the agency's future under President Trump. And over three-quarters said yes. Linda in Delmar, I think we take clean air and safe drinking water for granted. Environmental regulations protect us all. Sue in Endicott, watching on WSKG, disagrees, saying the EPA should be abolished. It's a tool of the globalists. And finally, Susan in Deer Park, watching on WLIW out on Long Island, told us anti-science combined with corporate and personal greed can only mean the people of our nation are going to be at an increased risk under the new EPA of Trump's administration. We want to thank everyone for participating this week, and we hope to hear from you again. NYNOW.org is the address. While you're there, you can watch any of our past programs and follow links to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at NYNOW_PBS. You'll also find a pathway to the Capitol Confidential blog run by Casey and his staff, which can also be found at timesunion.com. Casey, you remember back under David Patterson's tenure as governor, we used to often end on a lighter note, as he was easily the funniest governor we've covered.
Andrew Cuomo can be very funny.
At times,
very witty
yes.
guy. So we leave you today with a clip from the press conference. It comes in response to a question from our good friend Ken Lovett of the Daily News. The subject is the state liquor authority's oversight of what's euphemistically known as an exotic dancing facility in the Bronx. I'm Casey Seiler.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Governor, knowing I'm setting myself up for a quip here, the Daily News outline.
A whip?
A quip.
Oh, sorry.
The Daily News.
We're